The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up. Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Skyhook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille, fadeaway.
Bryant for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 0.5 of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and D. Today, we got some pretty cool news. Dave McMenamin reporting that Luka is going to be flying out the whole team, including the two-way guys, out to Slovenia for a little 4-day mini camp. That been wanting to talk about this transition to the Luka era and just what the team did to build a team around Luka. And so much of it starts, though, with the connectivity between the players. And that's one thing that, regardless of play style, I'd say just about every NBA champion has in common is a level of connectivity. You saw that in the Villanova boys in the most recent NBA title, but OKC, go back to the last Lakers championship, that 2020 team. They had a similar mini camp, I believe, in Vegas. And you saw that connectivity both on and off the court. One of my favorite memories from that year were the pregames. JaVale McGee would get everybody hyped up with some language I probably can't use too much of on the pod. But whenever you would watch those videos, it'd be like, man, I'm ready for the game. You know, like, get everybody hyped up. And there was just that connectivity that I think you really have to work at. It's part of the magic and alchemy of basketball is it's this fast-moving group activity that you really need everybody to be on the same page. And so much of our focus, rightfully so, over the offseason is the accumulation and collection of talent on the team. But stuff like this, I think, really goes toward that. So what's your reaction to today's news of a mini camp, everybody traveling abroad.
First of all, I agree with you. I think it's cool that this is what he's doing. I think it's funny that they're going all of the way to Slovenia for this when previous iterations of this sort of camp happened either in Southern California, like in San Diego with the Lakers, or in Las Vegas. And there was a veteran mini camp sort of thing that did happen in Vegas during Summer League, where we saw Colin Sexton and Walker Kessler and a lot of the new guys there. And Austin was even on the record there, and Austin was there as well. So to go, I don't know how many time zones, our friend Istok could inform us about how many time zones away Slovenia is. But for everyone to go out there to sort of meet up on Luka's home turf and to see the sights, but also build some of that camaraderie that you were talking about, I think it is important. And this idea actually dovetails with something that I've been thinking a fair amount about lately too, Pete, which is the departure of LeBron and sort of what the Lakers lose with LeBron leaving. And this isn't necessarily even on the court stuff. It's just the ever-present figure that is LeBron James, and a lot of this idea that I think bore true in the transactions of this summer, mainly with LeBron leaving, but also gearing a roster towards supporting Luka. The Lakers really being ready to pass the team to Luka and to have LeBron transition out of the organization. And you were on this way earlier than anyone else. It seems like common sense now that everyone else is saying the Lakers seemed ready to let LeBron go. This was something that you were talking about months before free agency started even. But what the Lakers lose with LeBron leaving and what it means for Luka, right? And we can talk about all of the on-court stuff and how the players support him and X's and O's and style of play. And that stuff is meaningful, Pete. But the leadership factor of what it means to be a Luka Doncic-led team versus what it means to be a LeBron-led team, I think, is almost the most important factor of where the team goes. Strategically and X's and O's-wise, that's more of a shared leadership idea to me. That's going to be what the head coach's vision is for the team, how his assistant coaches support him in that in terms of Redick, and how the players both buy into those ideas but contribute their own perspectives in order to shape the larger idea of what the team is going to be on the court from a tactical and execution standpoint. But the whole, this is our mindset, this is sort of our day-to-day approach, I think a lot about how Austin's talked about LeBron over the years. And, you know, he's like the oldest kid in the room, essentially. And there was a sort of effervescence to him and a youngness and youth to him. And Luka's a very, I think he has some of that to his personality as well, but he's much more of a sarcastic leader and person who connects to his teammates in a different way than I think LeBron did. And to this point that you started the pod with in terms of this McMenamin report, I'm very interested in the development of Luka the leader within the context of this Lakers team in conjunction with the absence and the departure of LeBron. Because these are two sort of ships and two ideas passing in the night a little bit to me. And that baton has been handed off and passed off in ways that could never happen when both were on the roster together.
I think that's an important point because, you know, Luka's been the best player on the team since he's been on the team. But there's only one person who can sit in the chair of the leader of the team. And if you've got LeBron James on your team, that's who it's going to be. And that comes with great benefit. I don't want to undersell any of what he brought to the table. And there's a level of genius and communication. He was one of the team's best talkers. But he's got such a larger-than-life presence that you can't have two at the same time. And that him leaving, it really opens up that place for Luka to fill a familiar role. This is not something that it's the first time in Luka's life that he's done this, or even in the NBA that he's done this. And so them exploring that and them having the time to start just building the connective tissue, I think it's important to do this independent of the coaches too. Like, I love that this is a players only type of mini camp. And I think these are important because every great team establishes a level of ownership amongst the players of what we're going to be, of a type of accountability that Of course, the coaches are going to be there to reinforce and provide a strategic, you know, direction and things like that. But so much of it is guys who are on the court understanding what we are in the first place, and then reinforcing those whenever everybody's going to get off track just over the course of a season, and being able to correct and get everybody back aligned. But that has to start with understanding what that is in the first place. So I'm curious your thoughts, Steve, like what can be accomplished in establishing that this is who we are in the first place?
One of the things I think, when you mentioned the 2020 team, I remember in the moment, all of the reporting around, all of these guys were going out to team dinners before COVID, right? Team dinners, and normally there might be two or three different cliques. But I remember the reports with those Lakers teams, it being like 8, 9, 10, 11 guys all going out to dinner on the road and just sort of enjoying each other's company and really relating to each other on a group level. And I think that LeBron and AD's natural sort of chemistry and relationship as the co-leaders, with LeBron sort of being the North Star within that, I think went a long way towards that group and everyone else sort of falling in line and the personality of all of those guys meshing the way that they did. I'm interested to see how Luka and then Austin can potentially replicate some of that same idea, because Luka and Austin are very close. And I think, honestly, from a personality standpoint, they're different, but there's enough overlap in terms of how they connect from a relationship perspective that I do think it will be the sort of leadership tenor that is established within the team, if that makes sense.
What do you notice in the connectivity between them? Like, one thing that stands out to me is they're both competitive in a, like, I want to beat you at dominoes, I want to beat you in this shooting game, I want to beat you at golf. Like, it is sort of this, like, brotherly rivalry, yeah, sort of thing where it's like competitive sports brothers type of thing where I want to beat you at that sort of thing. And I think being out in Slovenia and all of that together, I think that you can really foster that.
I would say that there is a competitiveness to it. I also think that there's like a sarcasm, and that brotherly connection that you're talking about is, I think, at the root of it all. And what ties that together is, to me, the true caring for each other's success and wanting the other guy to do well too, right? Now, you may want to be better or do that one thing better so you could hold it over him, but you're never wanting the other guy to do poorly. You never want to see the other guy actually fail. And I think that their connection is seemingly built on this idea of, we're going to go out and do something special. And when we then match up against each other, I'm going to talk my shit to you and I'm going to do this. And it's all in that, just like you said, that brotherly way of being like a dude, for lack of a better term. And so I want to go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to talk about what sort of role can serve for the entire group.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is Chat Missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
If there's one thing I want for my best players, Pete, it's to be driven by winning. It's to be driven by competitiveness. And I actually think this is one of the underrated factors of LeBron. One of the things that was often talked about in terms of his critics was LeBron doesn't have that killer instinct. He's not the same competitor that like a Michael Jordan was or a Kobe Bryant was. And I just scoff at that stuff. LeBron was awesome. He won all of these championships and on a night-to-night basis competed at a higher level than pretty much the entire league. And I know he enjoyed rubbing it in against teams like Toronto and Boston. He loved to put his foot on those dudes' necks. And I think Luka is more of the like outwardly, I want to dominate you personality that is more in the line of a Kobe or a Jordan. And that inspires that sort of same belief of like, we're out to get you. And I actually think Austin, while not as pronounced with what he does from an outwardly perspective, is just as driven to win on a night-to-night basis. And I'm wondering how you see that connectivity between them as well as a driving factor for what the team is going to be, because this is what I think is most important when it comes to the transition from a LeBron-based team to a Luka-based team, is the personalities may be different, but the goals need to be the same. And I think that if there wasn't that same focus, I might have concerns about what it was going to be under Luka. But to your point, he's done this almost his whole career before he came to a LeBron-led team. So I have fewer concerns about that, but I'm wondering where your head is around this whole idea.
So I agree with you with respect to LeBron's competitiveness, but I also believe that at the end of his career here, it's much more difficult to do it for 82. That's the distinction between this year's team and last year's team for me. And even just the existence of this camp, right, which they did do in 2019, and it served them extremely well all the way to a championship. But LeBron spoke to it on Mind the Game. Like, he doesn't have that 82 games to where he can treat November and December the same way that he is looking to step on next on in the playoffs. And we saw him get better after the All-Star break and turn up in the playoffs without Luka at all and lead us to a playoff series win. But it's very different from that to being able to have the steam and just the gas in the tank to be like, no, it's freaking July. We're going to do this camp. We're going to travel halfway across the world in a couple of weeks and have a level of get after it in August and be able to sustain that. Now, we'll see if they can or not. But that is, I think, the primary difference is last few years of Lakers basketball, I felt like the regular season has been something they have to get through and endure and survive on a team-wide basis. Whereas I think the Lakers, especially with all these new players, that's the other thing that stands out to me, is we've got so much roster turnover that this sort of gets a head start on things that would happen in the preseason, whereas other teams, our rivals, like, they know who they are. They know what type of connectivity they already have, and the Lakers are behind in that aspect, so Lakers can keep up. But there's a certain, like, 82 game, and even beyond, if they're doing this sort of thing in August, that I just think that's the benefit of having guys in their 20s. So it's their responsibility to cash in on that.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Pete, because I think the framing of our discussion to this point is some of the things you lose with LeBron, right? And I think there's totally a flip side of this, which is a valid discussion to have, which are the things that you can gain even with losing a player the caliber of leader that LeBron has been. And that is the sort of youth and exuberance that comes from being 26, 27, 28 right. years old that you're not going to have when you're 41 years old. And when your leader is also the oldest player in the league, and your leader has a clear ramp up process to be his best in April, May, and June, but the rest of your team doesn't necessarily have that same understanding of what that ramp up process looks like, or their own sort of process to follow that mirrors what your leader is doing, I think it can lead to certain nights where, if your team is built up of certain personalities, where guys aren't going as hard as they could be, even though they are the 24 and 25 and 26-year-old players. And that was one of the things I thought was both a makeup of the team idea, but also a reflection of LeBron being your leader that the Lakers have dealt with the last two or three seasons, honestly, even before Luka came, which was, well, this team goes as LeBron goes. And on the nights where he was turned up and ready to go, I think Lakers fans saw that and what that could mean for the overall oomph and verve that the group played with. But the team also had a bunch of guys that were just like, okay, well, this is what LeBron is on tonight in the other direction. And they would sort of go through the motions themselves and pace themselves a little bit. And I remember us both on the pod and off the pod sort of being like, what's up with player X? He shouldn't be loafing. He's 25. He needs to be racing the court regardless. But that player wouldn't turn up unless LeBron was turning up too. And now that's too general. They would play hard, right? But the overall stewardship of the team reflected what LeBron was going to be on any given night. And now I think as the team turns the page to younger players and to Luka and then to Austin, I'm hopeful, and I can't say that this is going to happen for sure, but I'm hopeful that 82 game idea, it's closer to that 82 games because no player is going to be on for 82 games. Kobe Bryant wasn't. We watched his entire career. And so I want to be realistic with this, but on more nights, and without the sort of need to say, this is going to be my trajectory for an entire season where I'm mapping out what I hope to be a 100-game campaign, I'm very interested to see what this could mean for the Lakers and the rest of the team following the lead that Luka and Austin can set in this regard.
Yeah, I think having a high-intensity regular season requires two factors. And one is that talent of a certain age, but also a level of depth that I think this Lakers roster has that they built really toward that direction to where, like you're saying, nobody's going to have it for all 82 and be really turned up and ready to go on every single game. And then you're going to have the natural attrition of injuries and all of that. But one thing I really like about this Lakers roster is you've got guys that you could totally put in a game and be like, yeah, that guy can help us win regular season games and not have that be a problem. One of the reasons I feel like I think the Lakers line right now for regular season wins is 45 and a half. And I know we haven't seen this group. I have less certainty on what they're going to be than I've had in several years because there's been so much turnover. But like a Luka team that's got Austin and a bunch of dudes in their 20s that go 12, 13 guys deep that you could put into a game, like 45 and a half wins is their current line. Like, I think that's free money right now, but let's go to break here. Want to come back, wrap up this conversation, and then got some reporting on Lakers' interest in a backup big man.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
So, Dee, as we know, they're still looking to build some of these parts on this team. And we've talked considerably about the starting forward position. And I can't do 5-6 weeks of Kuminga watch and breakdowns and things like that. But got some reporting from Dan Wiecki about possible targets for the backup big man spot. And some of the names we got were Jericho Sims, Carlo Matkovich from New Orleans, and Jalen Smith from the Bulls. And I've got mixed feelings on this, and I wanted to talk to you about just sort of how they should be approaching the backup center spot and just talent acquisition, even outside of that starting forward spot. So what was your reaction to that news?
First of all, in the vein of the conversation we've been having about them seeking out a starting forward, that identifying that you have a need is, to me, one of the more important parts of that sort of accountability and self-evaluation for what you can be as a team, and them wanting another big on the roster and potentially someone who would play in front of Looney, I think is the proper evaluation for this group. So my first point is just if the fact that this is in the news at all and that it's a report at all that they're examining targets is good and what I would want to hear. The names are reflective of, and Dan laid this out in his story, how much of a seller's market or like a bear market that the center position is in general. So many bigs got paid, Pete, and a bunch of backups or guys who are high quality backups are making essentially the MLE. I remember during the offseason, I was just like, wait, this guy's getting what now? And it led to you and I really, I think, stressing before the Kessler deal happens. It's like, what are they going to do here? Are they going to have to like overpay Mitchell Robinson or do something where it's just like, this guy's more of a fringe starter, but they're going to have to invest in him like a real starter? We didn't want to see that.
It's part of the reason why Kessler's price was what it was.
Yes, particularly from the draft pick
compensation
stuff. The point I will make about Matkovich or Jalen Smith or Jericho Sims, these are backup to third string bigs. Sims is the third string big in Milwaukee right now. And if he's actually your primary backup, I would have concerns, not necessarily the same concerns, but I would have concerns in the same way that if Looney was your primary backup. I like Sims' skill set. I think that he can match well with Luka, but do I think that he's a guy who I could rely on to play in the second round of the playoffs and have no concerns? Absolutely not. In fact, none of those names are.
Right.
And so I want to kick that idea back to you, because one of the things I was nodding my head at vigorously when you were talking was like, what should the expectations be for this position in general? And I'd love to get your thoughts on that idea as well. Is this just an innings eater for the regular season, or do you want a big who could potentially play in the postseason?
So broadly speaking, this applies to the big man spot, but not just that. It's the forward spot as well, is I don't really want them trading capital for guys that we don't think are playoff rotation players, right? So I think Sims is the best fit. I think Smith is the best overall player. And I think Matkovich has the highest ceiling. He's the one that's most intriguing to me. But none of them are guys where I'm like, yeah, we've got that need covered in a playoff series. We know that the backup five spot is going to be all right. We also paid Mamu, who, depending on who you ask, is a five or a four-ish five. And I do want to get your thoughts on him and how he fits into this. But I don't want the Lakers, with as limited draft capital as they have to trade, to be trading any of it really for a guy that is just another 11th man on the roster. I think Smith probably has the best argument for, no, I'm better than that, and I could fill more of a role than that. But that's sort of how I feel about this group. We were talking about that idea of Mr. Right versus Mr. Right Now. These guys feel like Mr. Right Now, where it's, well, we have this need at this spot, and let's fill it with somebody that we have more confidence in than Kevon Looney, but not really filling it appropriately. And my concern is that, okay, well, then how are we going to fill that down the line if we're trading anything of substance at all? But you don't get any of these guys if you don't trade anything for them. So I do wonder if this would be wrapped into a larger, like, if they were to sign and trade for Kuminga, does it become a three-team deal with the Bulls, who are one of two teams, I think, with cap space right now? It's very small. It's only a couple million, but they have a good deal of trade flexibility where they're at in their financial position. And would it be where you get both of them in that type of deal? And at the end of that, I'd be like, hey, we got 14 guys we can put into a game that I feel really good about. But that's sort of where I'm at on that, D, is that I don't want us to be trading any of our limited capital for guys that I think are just 11th men, you know?
I agree with that. I want to do a player comparison thing for you really quickly and take you back to last year's roster. So Jackson, who left for Utah, was the Lakers' backup center last year. He was on a $4 million contract or whatever he was on, and next year he's going to make $6 million for Utah. And let's use him as the line of demarcation. So would you have felt comfortable with Jackson as the backup big this year as a guy who could play in the playoffs? And so, like, let's say Jackson was on another team last year, played exactly how he played for the Lakers, right? Got some playoff reps, was a good regular season backup, spot starter, did well, and he was on another team. Would he meet your threshold of trading an asset for him as a guy where you're just like, no, I see it with him, and he could be our quote-unquote long-term backup?
Yes, I would. I do think he's at a higher tier than any of these guys. I thought he was in the argument for a, you know, top 7 to 10 backup center in the NBA last year. So, yeah, he, to me, is a different tier that I think is worth it.
So I was going to agree with you on that. And that's sort of where my mindset is too. And so that's sort of the idea I would put forward, or the thought I would put forward for Lakers fans in general, right? Is ideally I'm looking for a player as good or better than Jackson Hayes. I think Smith has the best pedigree and history in the league to be that sort of player. He makes a little bit more than Jackson, but I would think he has the most ability to go out there and say, like, no, I could be a spot starter on certain nights if Kessler didn't play, and I could feel good about him stepping into a role where it's on any given night he's playing at least two shifts and maybe sometimes three or maybe more if he has to be a starter. And it's why, of the names that were mentioned, he's the guy where I'm like, he's the most proven. He's the guy where I'm just like, okay, he's not the biggest, he's not the best leaper, but I think from a well-rounded standpoint, he would be the guy that I would like the most, because if Kessler doesn't play, I don't know who's going to step in to be the Lakers starting center in that instance with the roster as it is right now. And I guess that should bring us to Mamu. I don't mind him playing center for this team. I would prefer that not be the predominant backup look. I would like that to be a tool they have in their bag as more of a small ball look. And I would like for the Lakers to be able to replicate sort of like what Toronto was doing when Mamu was playing center for them, which is loading up on bigger players on the wing and on the perimeter. And that requires them getting a certain caliber of player in the power forward market as well, right? I see some of the Mamu stuff as a backup big rolling in tandem with what happens at the power forward spot. Do you have the same comfort level as I do with him playing backup center, even for a shift or two a game, where it's just like, hey, we're going to give 3 or 4 minutes of small ball look right now, and Mamu's our guy in those minutes?
I have equal levels of discomfort at him either at the four or the five. I think that there are convincing arguments for why it won't work with both of those, in that, for example, there's a non-zero chance that if we don't get that starting forward, that Mamu could be the guy who starts at that. He's certainly the guy who's paid the most that could possibly play that spot, but I both like him as a second big. I think this is an under-discussed really position in the NBA, that some guys, if they're the only big that you have on the court, that is a sign that you're not going to be particularly good on the defensive end usually. And I think this speaks to your concerns about playing him at the five a ton. But if they're the second big on the court, they could be very good. So I do like some, like, two big lineups with Mamu and Kessler, for example. I think that's a really good combo. But what I don't like is the other front court player being Luka in that instance, in that, like, I don't think you've got enough perimeter speed between Mamu and Luka to defend at a high enough level on the perimeter and get out to there. And so I've got concerns about, like, how he would fit in either of those groups, which isn't to say that there aren't several player combinations that I do think he could play either the four or the five spot at. He's sensitive to the players that are around him and then the scheme. And that's one thing that gives me a little bit of hope that I think is going to be prominent in the Mamu minutes, is a lot of the concept of the defense the last couple of years under Redick has been, we don't have enough like point of attack defense, or we don't really have the guys that can stay in front. And so we're building around that reality and building contingencies into place where it's like, we know we're going to get beat off the dribble, but we can't just lay back. We have to get out to three-point shooters. We have to be an effective defense despite this. That I think you'll see an application of that in the Mamu minutes. And it's part of the reason why I do think that seeing Mamu at the five is a decent possibility, and just have it be much more of that switchy peel-off type of style that we've seen. Even with Jackson, as much as I liked him, was not a rim protector, was not a guy that was really a good drop coverage type of player. That I think a lot of the similar type of concepts that if Mamu can be engaged, and from the tape I've seen, like, he's got care factor, as coaches like to say, and he is mentally engaged, and that's so much of the peel-off switching type of style defensively, that you just have to know, okay, I'm on the perimeter now, I'm guarding, now I go off to the corner. That I think he can be very effective within that. But that's sort of where I'm at, D, is that I think you can present pretty convincing arguments both at the four or the five with Mamu, that, and that's going to be a big swing factor, I think, for this team, is that if they can find a role for him defensively that can carry forward even through the playoffs.
I agree. I also think that Mamu potentially playing with whatever center the Lakers are looking to sign still is also a possibility. And Mamu, this other center, let's say it's Jericho Sims, in this example, who is a much more traditional pick and roll lob threat, can play out of the dunker spot. You could even run pick and rolls with Mamu and have this big sitting in the dunker spot, and then Mamu in the short roll could be a playmaker. And there's a lot of stuff that you can do in this scenario, right? So let's say it's Sims. If you have Mamu and Sims and Austin as the point guard, right? And then you have him with, like, I don't know, Tybal and Sexton, is that team going to be a great defensive team? I don't think so, but I'm trying to figure out what groupings are going to come together where you can be good enough on offense while surviving on defense, with Mamu being a key contributor in both of those spots, right? And I have high hopes for him offensively, and I do think that he's going to be super helpful there. The building out a credible defense and what that looks like is something that Redick is going to have to do. And I am interested to see what it looks like potentially with Mamu playing center, and how many wings the Lakers do have to throw out there that are rangy, that can defend, and if it's a Tybalt, and I don't know who would be the guards at that point. Luka, potentially. I'm not exactly sure what it's all going to be, but I'm intrigued by this idea of chasing another big to round out the roster in general. And if the Lakers are able to make a trade for a center and they are able to open up a roster spot at the same time, I do think that that's about as close as this team can get to being what it will be, at least through the trade deadline and maybe through the entire season at that point.
Absolutely. But as you were talking through that, I think that it is wiser to hold off for a defender at the five spot. I think Mamu's deficiencies really dictate that you need to have somebody who's good. Like, I don't think Sims is a very good defender. Smith is okay. Matt Kovach will get some blocks, but I don't think any of those groups would work, frankly, that you were bringing up. I think they'd get scorched on the defensive end to a degree where it's like, yeah, you could, and they might have some offensive ability, but I think they need to wait for that defender to pop up.
So then, what about just playing small then?
That's the thing, is
because if you're going to get torched defensively, talking through it, I hear what you're saying, and I'm sort of nodding my head in agreement there. And so if you're conceding the idea that defensively you might be soft up the middle or at the rim, then playing Mamu there, spacing the floor offensively, trying to put as many wing defenders on the court as you can, and saying, this is the group, we're going to try to replicate what the Raptors did with him, that may be the best course of action for extended stretches during each game.
To put this very simply, it's like, would I rather have these guys playing, or would I rather have Adu playing in exactly the type of group that you're talking about, where you've got that athletic wing that where you're switching everything, and the guy who actually switches at the four or five spot can actually move his feet to be able to put pressure on the ball. I would much rather watch Adu and have them be a small ball type of group where it's like Adu, Mamu at the 4-5 than have a too big group where neither of them are good on the defensive end. So
that's fair. And I would agree with that, actually.
All right. This is probably the last you'll hear from me until next week, moving on Friday. So got a couple of busy days up ahead of me. We'll see. D, I'm leaving it up to you if there's going to be a pod the rest of the week. But if any news drops, I will do my best to hop on, even though I might not have my mic on me. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires again. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.